Down from the wall leapt Gimli with a fierce cry that echoed in the cliffs. "Khazad! Khazad!" He soon had work enough. "Ay, oi!" he shouted. "The orcs are behind the wall. Ay, oi! Come, Legolas! There are enough for us both. Khazad, ay, Menu!" Gamling the Old looked down from the Hornburg, hearing the great voice of the dwarf above all the tumult. "The orcs are in the deep," he cried. "Helm, helm, forth, Helmingas!" He shouted as he leapt down the stair from the rock with many men of Westfold at his back. Their onset was fierce and sudden, and the orcs gave way before them. Ere long they were hemmed in the narrows of the gorge, and all were slain or driven shrieking into the chasm of the deep, to fall before the guardians of the hidden caves.
21! Cried Gimli.
He hewed a two-handed stroke and laid the last orc before his feet.
"Now my count passes Master Legolas again."
"We must stop this rat-hole," said Gamling. "Dwarves are said to be cunning folk with stone. Lend us your aid, master."
"We don't shape stone with battle-axes, nor with our finger-nails," said Gimli. "But I'll help as I may."
They gathered such small boulders and broken stones as they could find to hand, and under Gimli's direction the Westfold men blocked up the inner end of the culvert until only a narrow outlet remained. Then the deeping stream, swollen by the rain, churned and fretted in its choked path, and spread slowly in cold pools from cliff to cliff.
"It will be drier above," said Gimli. "Come, Gamling, let's see how things go on the wall."
He climbed up and found Legolas beside Aragorn and Eomer. The elf was whetting his long knife. There was for a while a lull in the assault, since the attempt to break in through the culvert had been foiled.
21, said Gimli.
Good, said Legolas, but my count is now 24. It's been knife work up here. Eomer and Aragorn leant wearily on their swords. Away on the left, the crash and clamour of the battle on the rock rose loud again, but the Hornburg still held fast, like an island in the sea. Its gates lay in ruin, but over the barricade of beams and stones within, no enemy as yet had passed. Aragorn looked at the pale stars and at the moon, now sloping behind the western hills that enclosed the valley. "This is a night as long as years," he said. "How long will the day tarry?" "Dawn is not far off," said Gamling, who had now climbed up beside him. "But dawn won't help us, I fear." "Yet dawn is ever the hope of men," said Aragorn. "But these creatures of Isengard, these half-orcs and goblin men that the foul craft of Saruman has bred, they'll not quail at the sun," said Gamling. "And neither will the wild men of the hills. Don't you hear their voices?"
"I hear them," said Eomer.
"But they're only the scream of birds and the bellowing of beasts to my ears."
"Yet there are many that cry in the Dunland tongue," said Gamling. "I know that tongue. It's an ancient speech of men, and once was spoken in many western valleys of the Mark. Hark! They hate us, and they're glad, for our doom seems certain to them. The king, they cry. We'll take their king. Death to the Forgoyle, death to the Strawheads, death to the robbers of the north. Such names they have for us. Not in half a thousand years have they forgotten their grievance that the lords of Gondor gave the mark to Eol the Young and made alliance with him. That old hatred Saruman is inflamed. They're fierce folk when aroused. They'll not give way now for dusk or dawn until Theron is taken, or they themselves are slain."
"Nonetheless, day will bring hope to me," said Aragorn. "Is it not said that no foe has ever taken the Hornburg, if men defended it?"
"So the minstrels say," said Eomer.
"Then let us defend it, and hope," said Aragorn.
Even as they spoke, there came a blare of trumpets. Then there was a crash and a flash of flame and smoke. The waters of the deeping stream poured out hissing and foaming. They were choked no longer. A gaping hole was blasted in the wall. A host of dark shapes poured in.
"Devilry of Saruman!" cried Aragorn. "They've crept in the culvert again while we talked, and they've lit the fire of Orthanc beneath our feet. "Elendil! Elendil!" he shouted, as he leapt down into the breach. But even as he did so, 100 ladders were raised against the battlements. Over the wall and under the wall the last assault came sweeping like a dark wave upon a hill of sand. The defence was swept away. Some of the riders were driven back, further and further into the deep, falling and fighting as they gave way, step by step, towards the caves. Others cut their way back towards the citadel. A broad stairway climbed from the deep up to the rock and the rear gate of the Hornburg. Near the bottom stood Aragorn. In his hand still, Andúril gleamed, and the terror of the sword for a while held back the enemy, as one by one all who could gain the stair passed up towards the gate. Behind on the upper steps knelt Legolas. His bow was bent, but one gleamed arrow was all that he had left, and he peered out now, ready to shoot the first orc that should dare to approach the stair. "All who can have now got safe within, Aragorn," he called. "Come back!" Aragorn turned and sped up the stair, but as he ran he stumbled in his weariness. At once his enemies leapt forward. Up came the orcs, yelling, with their long arms stretched out to seize him. The foremost fell with Legolas's last arrow in his throat, but the rest sprang over him. Then a great boulder, cast from the outer wall above, crashed down upon the stair and hurled them back into the deep. Aragorn gained the door, and swiftly it clanged to behind him.
"Things go ill, my friends," he said, wiping the sweat from his brow with his arm.
"Ill enough," said Legolas, "but not yet hopeless. Why we have you with us? Where's Gimli?"
"I don't know," said Aragorn. "I last saw him fighting on the ground behind the wall, but the enemy swept us apart."
"Alas, that's evil news," said Legolas.
"He's stout and strong," said Aragorn. "Let's hope that he'll escape back to the caves. There he'd be safe for a while, safer than we. Such a refuge would be to the liking of a dwarf."
"That must be my hope," said Legolas. "But I wish that it had come this way. I desired to tell Master Gimli that my tale is now 39.
"If he wins back to the caves, he'll pass your count again," laughed Aragorn. "Never did I see an axe so wielded."
"I must go and seek some arrows," said Legolas. "Would that this night would end, and I could have better light for shooting." Aragorn now passed into the citadel. There, to his dismay, he learned that Éomer hadn't reached the Hornburg.
"Nay, he didn't come to the rock," said one of the Westfold men.
"I last saw him gathering men about him and fighting in the mouth of the deep. Gamling was with him, and the dwarf, but I couldn't come to them." Aragorn strode on through the inner court and mounted to a high chamber in the tower. There stood the king, dark against a narrow window, looking out upon the vale.
"What is the news, Aragorn?" he said.
"The Deeping Wall is taken, lord, and all the defence swept away, but many have escaped hither to the rock."
"Is Éomer here?"
"No, lord, but many of your men retreated into the deep, and some say that Éomer was amongst them. In the narrows they may hold back the enemy and come within the caves. What hope they may have then, I don't know."
"More than we. Good provision, it said, and the air is wholesome there because of the outlets through fissures in the rock far above. None can force an entrance against determined men. They may hold out long."
"But the orcs have brought a devilry from Orthanc," said Aragorn. "They have a blasting fire, and with it they took the wall. If they can't come in the caves, they may seal up those that are inside. But now we must turn all our thoughts to our own defence."
"I fret in this prison," said Theoden. "If I could have set a spear in rest, riding before my men upon the field, maybe I could have felt again the joy of battle, and so ended. But I serve little purpose here."
"Here at least you're guarded in the strongest fastness of the mark," said Aragorn. "More hope we have to defend you in the Hornburg than in Edoras, or even at Dunharrow in the mountains."
"It's said that the Hornburg has never fallen to assault," said Théoden. "But now my heart is doubtful. The world changes, and all that once was strong now proves unsure. How shall any tower withstand such numbers and such reckless hate? Had I known that the strength of Isengard was grown so great, Maybe I shouldn't so rashly have ridden forth to meet it, for all the arts of Gandalf. His counsel seems not now so good as it did under the morning sun.
Don't judge the counsel of Gandalf until all is over, Lord, said Aragorn.
The end will not be long, said the king. But I won't end here, taken like an old badger in a trap. Snowmane and Harsofell and the horses of my guard are in the inner court. When dawn comes, I'll bid my men sound Helm's horn, and I'll ride forth. Will you ride with me, then, son of Arathorn? Maybe we shall cleave a road, or make such an end as will be worth a song, if any be left to sing of us hereafter.
I'll ride with you, said Aragorn.
Taking his leave, he returned to the walls, and passed round all their circuit, enheartening the men, and lending aid wherever the assault was hot. Legolas went with him. Blasts of fire leapt up from below, shaking the stones. Grappling hooks were hurled, and ladders raised. Again and again the orcs gained the summit of the outer wall, and again the defenders cast them down. At last Aragorn stood above the great gates, heedless of the darts of the enemy. As he looked forth, he saw the eastern sky grow pale. Then he raised his empty hand, palm outward in token of parley.
The orcs yelled and jeered.
Come down! Come down! They cried. If you wish to speak to us, come down. Bring out your king. We're the fighting Uruk-hai. We'll fetch him from his hole if he doesn't come. Bring out your skulking king.
The king stays or comes at his own will, said Aragorn.
Then what are you doing here?
They answered.
Why do you look out? Do you wish to see the greatness of our army? We are the fighting Uruk-hai.
I looked out to see the dawn, said Aragorn.
What of the dawn? They jeered. We are the Uruk-hai. We don't stop the fight for night or day, for fair weather or for storm. We come to kill by sun or moon. What of the dawn?
None knows what the new day shall bring him, said Aragorn. Get you gone, ere it turn to your evil.
Get down, or we'll shoot you from the wall, they cried. This is no party. You've nothing to say.
I have still this to say, answered Aragorn. No enemy has yet taken the Hornburg. Depart, or not one of you will be spared. Not one will be left alive to take back tidings to the north. You don't know your peril. So great a power and royalty was revealed in Aragorn as he stood there alone above the ruined gates before the host of his enemies, that many of the wild men paused and looked back over their shoulders to the valley, and some looked up doubtfully at the sky. But the orcs laughed with loud voices, and a hail of darts and arrows whistled over the wall as Aragorn leaped down. There was a roar and a blast of fire. The archway of the gate above which he had stood a moment before crumbled and crashed in smoke and dust. The barricade was scattered as if by a thunderbolt. Aragorn ran to the king's tower. But even as the gate fell, and the orcs about it yelled, preparing to charge, a murmur arose behind them, like a wind in the distance, and it grew to a clamour of many voices crying strange news in the dawn. The orcs upon the rock, hearing the rumour of dismay, wavered and looked back, and then, sudden and terrible, from the tower above, the sound of the great horn of Helm rang out. All that heard that sound trembled. Many of the orcs cast themselves on their faces and covered their ears with their claws. Back from the deep the echoes came, blast upon blast, as if on every cliff and hill a mighty herald stood. But on the walls men looked up, listening with wonder, for the echoes didn't die. Ever the horn blasts wound on among the hills. Nearer now and louder they answered one to another, blowing fierce and free.
Helm! Helm! The rider shouted. Helm is arisen and comes back to war. Helm for Theoden King!
And with that shout the king came. His horse was white as snow. Golden was his shield, and his spear was long. At his right hand was Aragorn, Elendil's heir. Behind him rode the lords of the house of Eorl the Young. Light sprang in the sky. Night departed.
Forth, Eorlingers!
With a cry and a great noise they charged. Down from the gates they roared, over the causeway they swept, and they drove through the hosts of Isengard as a wind among grass. Behind them from the deep came the stern cries of men issuing from the caves, driving forth the enemy. Out poured all the men that were left upon the rock, and ever the sound of blowing horns echoed in the hills. On they rode, the king and his companions. Captains and champions fell or fled before them. Neither orc nor man withstood them. Their backs were to the swords and spears of the riders, and their faces to the valley. They cried and wailed, for fear and great wonder had come upon them with the rising of the day. So King Theoden rode from Helm's Gate and clove his path to the great dyke. There the company halted. Light grew bright about them. Shafts of the sun flared above the eastern hills and glimmered on their spears. But they sat silent on their horses, and they gazed down upon the deeping coom. The land had changed. Where before the green dale had lain, its grassy slopes lapping the ever-mounting hills, there now a forest loomed. Great trees, bare and silent, stood rank on rank, with tangled bough and hoary head. Their twisted roots were buried in the long green grass. Darkness was under them. Between the dyke and the eaves of the nameless wood only 2 open furlongs lay. There now cowered the proud hosts of Saruman, in terror of the king and in terror of the trees. They streamed down from Helm's Gate until all above the dyke was empty of them. Just below it they were packed like swarming flies. Vainly they crawled and clambered about the walls of the coombe, seeking to escape. Upon the east, too sheer and stony was the valley's side. Upon the left, from the west, their final doom approached. There, suddenly, upon a ridge appeared a rider, clad in white, shining in the rising sun. Over the low hills the horns were sounding. Behind him, hastening down the long slopes, were 1,000 men on foot. Their swords were in their hands. Amid them strode a man tall and strong. His shield was red. As he came to the valley's brink, he set to his lips a great black horn and blew a ringing blast.
"Erkenbrand!" the rider shouted. "Erkenbrand!"
"Behold the White Rider!" cried Aragorn. "Gandalf is come again!"
"Mithrandir! Mithrandir!" said Legolas. "This is wizardry indeed! Come! I would look on this forest ere the spell changes."
The hosts of Isengard roared, swaying this way and that, turning from fear to fear. Again the horn sounded from the tower. Down through the breach of the dyke charged the king's company. Down from the hills leaped Erkenbrand, lord of Westfold. Down leaped Shadowfax, like a deer that runs sure-footed in the mountains. The White Rider was upon them, and the terror of his coming filled the enemy with madness. The wild men fell on their faces before him. The orcs reeled and screamed and cast aside both sword and spear. Like a black smoke driven by a mounting wind they fled. Wailing they passed under the waiting shadow of the trees, and from that shadow none ever came again. Chapter 8 The Road to Isengard. So it was that in the light of a fair morning King Theoden and Gandalf the White Rider met again upon the grass beside the deeping stream. There was also Aragorn, son of Arathorn, and Legolas the Elf, and Erkenbrand of Westfold, and the lords of the Golden House. About them were gathered the Rohirrim, the riders of the Mark. Wonder overcame their joy in victory, and their eyes were turned towards the wood. Suddenly there was a great shout, and down from the dyke came those who had been driven back into the deep. There came Gamling the Old, and Eomer son of Eomund, and beside them walked Gimli the dwarf. He had no helm, and about his head was a linen band stained with blood, but his voice was loud and strong.
42, Master Legolas," he cried. "Alas, my axe is notched. The 42nd had an iron collar on his neck. How is it with you?"
"You've passed my score by 1, answered Legolas, "but I don't grudge you the game. So glad am I to see you on your legs."
"Welcome, Eomer, sister son," said Theoden. "Now that I see you safe, I'm glad indeed."
"Hail, Lord of the Mark," said Eomer.
"The dark night has passed, and day has come again, but the day has brought strange tidings.
He turned and gazed in wonder, first at the wood and then at Gandalf. "Once more you come in the hour of need, unlooked for," he said.
"Unlooked for?" said Gandalf. "I said that I'd return and meet you here." "But you didn't name the hour, nor foretell the manner of your coming. Strange help you bring. You are mighty in wizardry, Gandalf the White."
"That may be, but if so, I've not shown it yet. I've but given good counsel in peril, and made use of the speed of Shadowfax. Your own valour has done more, and the stout legs of the Westfold men marching through the night." Then they all gazed at Gandalf with still greater wonder. Some glanced darkly at the wood, and passed their hands over their brows, as if they thought their eyes saw otherwise than his. Gandalf laughed long and merrily.
"The trees," he said. "Nay, I see the wood as plainly as do you. But that's no deed of mine. It's a thing beyond the counsel of the wise, better than my design, and better even than my hope the event has proved."
"Then if not yours, whose is the wizardry?" said Theoden. "Not Saruman's, that's plain. Is there some mightier sage of whom we have yet to learn?"
"It's not wizardry, but a power far older," said Gandalf. "A power that walked the earth, ere elf sang or hammer rang, ere iron was found or tree was hewn, when young was mountain under moon, ere ring was made or wrought was woe, it walked the forests long ago."
"And what may be the answer to your riddle?" said Theoden.
"If you would learn that, you should come with me to Isengard," answered Gandalf.
"To Isengard?" they cried.
"Yes," said Gandalf. "I shall return to Isengard, and those who will may come with me. There we may see strange things."
"But there are not men enough in the mark, not if they were all gathered together and healed of wounds and weariness, to assault the stronghold of Saruman," said Theoden.
"Nevertheless, to Isengard I go," said Gandalf.
"I shan't stay there long. My way lies now eastward. Look for me in Edoras, ere the waning of the moon."
"Nay," said Theoden. "In the dark hour before dawn I doubted, but we won't part now. I'll come with you, if that's your counsel."
"I wish to speak with Saruman as soon as may be now," said Gandalf. "And since he's done you great injury, it would be fitting if you were there. But how soon and how swiftly will you ride?"
"My men are weary with battle," said the king, "and I'm weary also, for I've ridden far and slept little."
"Alas, my old age is not feigned, nor due only to the whisperings of Wormtongue. It's an ill that no leech can wholly cure, not even Gandalf."
"Then let all who are to ride with me rest now," said Gandalf. "We'll journey under the shadow of evening. It's as well, for it's my counsel that all our comings and goings should be as secret as may be, henceforth. But don't command many men to go with you, Theoden. We go to a parley, not to a fight."
The king then chose men that were unhurt and had swift horses, and he sent them forth with tidings of the victory into every vale of the mark, and they bore his summons also, bidding all men, young and old, to come in haste to Edoras. There the lord of the mark would hold an assembly of all that could bear arms on the second day under the full moon. To ride with him to Isengard the king chose Éomer and 20 men of his household. With Gandalf would go Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli. In spite of his hurt, the dwarf wouldn't stay behind.
"It was only a feeble blow, and the cap turned it," he said. "It would take more than such an orc scratch to keep me back."
"I'll tend it while you rest," said Aragorn.
The king now returned to the Hornburg and slept, such a sleep of quiet as he had not known for many years, and the remainder of his chosen company rested also. But the others, all that were not hurt or wounded, began a great labour, for many had fallen in the battle and lay dead upon the field or in the deep. No orcs remained alive. Their bodies were uncounted. But a great many of the hillmen had given themselves up, and they were afraid and cried for mercy. The men of the mark took their weapons from them and set them to work.
"Help now to repair the evil in which you have joined," said Erkenbrand, "and afterwards you shall take an oath never again to pass the fords of Isen in arms, nor to march with the enemies of men, and then you shall go free back to your land. For you have been deluded by Saruman. Many of you have got death as the reward of your trust in him. But had you conquered, little better would your wages have been.
The men of Dunland were amazed, for Saruman had told them that the men of Rohan were cruel and burned their captives alive. In the midst of the field before the Hornburg, two mounds were raised, and beneath them were laid all the riders of the Mark who fell in the defence, those of the East Dales upon one side, and those of Westfold upon the other. In a grave alone under the shadow of the Hornburg lay Harmer, captain of the King's Guard. He fell before the gate. The orcs were piled in great heaps, away from the mounds of men, not far from the eaves of the forest, and the people were troubled in their minds, for the heaps of carrion were too great for burial or for burning. They had little wood for firing, and none would have dared to take an axe to the strange trees, even if Gandalf had not warned them to hurt neither bark nor bough at their great peril.
"Let the orcs lie," said Gandalf. "The morning may bring new counsel."
In the afternoon the king's company prepared to depart. The work of burial was then but beginning, and Théoden mourned for the loss of Harmer, his captain, and cast the first earth upon his grave.
"Great injury indeed has Saruman done to me and all this land," he said, "and I'll remember it when we meet."
The sun was already drawing near the hills upon the west of the Coombe, when at last Théoden and Gandalf and their companions rode down from the dyke. Behind them were gathered a great host, both of the riders and of the people of Westfold, old and young, women and children, who had come out from the caves. A song of victory they sang with clear voices, and then they fell silent, wondering what would chance, for their eyes were on the trees, and they feared them. The riders came to the wood, and they halted. Horse and man, they were unwilling to pass in. The trees were grey and menacing, and a shadow or a mist was about them. The ends of their long, sweeping boughs hung down like searching fingers, their roots stood up from the ground like the limbs of strange monsters, and dark caverns opened beneath them. But Gandalf went forward, leading the company, and where the road from the Hornburg met the trees, they saw now an opening like an arched gate under mighty boughs, and through it Gandalf passed, and they followed him. Then, to their amazement, they found that the road ran on, and the deeping stream beside it, and the sky was open above and full of golden light. But on either side the great aisles of the wood were already wrapped in dusk, stretching away into impenetrable shadows, and there they heard the creaking and groaning of boughs, and far cries, and a rumour of wordless voices murmuring angrily. No orc or other living creature could be seen. Legolas and Gimli were now riding together upon one horse, and they kept close beside Gandalf, for Gimli was afraid of the wood. "It's hot in here," said Legolas to Gandalf. "I feel a great wrath about me. Do you not feel the air throb in your ears?"
"Yes," said Gandalf.
"What has become of the miserable orcs?" said Legolas.
"That, I think, no one will ever know," said Gandalf.
They rode in silence for a while, but Legolas was ever glancing from side to side, and would often have halted to listen to the sounds of the wood, if Gimli had allowed it. "These are the strangest trees that ever I saw," he said, "and I've seen many an oak grow from acorn to ruinous age. I wish that there were leisure now to walk among them. They have voices, and in time I might come to understand their thought."
"No, no," said Gimli, "let us leave them. I guess their thoughts already. Hatred of all that goes on two legs, and their speeches of crushing and strangling."
"Not of all that go on two legs," said Legolas. "There I think you're wrong. It is orcs that they hate. For they don't belong here, and know little of elves and men. Far away are the valleys where they sprang. From the deep dales of Fangorn, Gimli, that is whence they come, I guess."
"Then that is the most perilous wood in Middle-earth," said Gimli.
I should be grateful for the part that they've played, but I don't love them. You may think them wonderful, but I've seen a greater wonder in this land, more beautiful than any grove or glade that ever grew. My heart is still full of it. Strange are the ways of men, Legolas. Here they have one of the marvels of the northern world, and what do they say of it? Caves, they say, caves. Holes to fly in time of war, to store fodder in. My good Legolas, do you know that the caverns of Helm's Deep are vast and beautiful? There would be an endless pilgrimage of dwarves, merely to gaze at them, if such a thing were known to be. Aye, indeed, they would pay pure gold for a brief glance.
And I would give gold to be excused, said Legolas, and double to be let out if I strayed in.
You've not seen, so I forgive your jest, said Gimli. But you speak like a fool. Do you think those hills are fair, where your king dwells under the hill in Mirkwood, and dwarves helped in their making long ago? They're but hovels compared with the caverns I've seen here, immeasurable halls filled with an everlasting music of water that tinkles into pools, as fair as Caladzaram in the starlight. And Legolas, when the torches are kindled and men walk on the sandy floors under the echoing domes, ah, then, Legolas, gems and crystals and veins of precious ore glint in the polished walls, and the light glows through folded marbles, shell-like, translucent as the living hands of Queen Galadriel. There are columns of white and saffron and dawn rose, Legolas, fluted and twisted into dream-like forms. They spring up from many-colored floors to meet the glistening pendants of the roof. Wings, ropes, curtains fine as frozen clouds, spears, banners, pinnacles of suspended palaces, still lakes mirror them. A glimmering world looks up from dark pools covered with clear glass. Cities, such as the mind of Durin could scarce have imagined in his sleep, stretch on through avenues and pillared courts, on into the dark recesses where no light can come, and plink! A silver drop falls, and the round wrinkles in the glass make all the towers bend and waver like weeds and corals in a grotto of the sea. Then evening comes. They fade and twinkle out. The torches pass on into another chamber and another dream. There is chamber after chamber, Legolas, hall opening out of hall, dome after dome, stair beyond stair, and still the winding paths lead on into the mountain's heart. Caves, the caverns of Helm's Deep. Happy was the chance that drove me there. It makes me weep to leave them.
Then I'll wish you this fortune for your comfort, Gimli, said the elf, that you may come safe from war and return to see them again. But don't tell all your kindred. There seems little left for them to do, from your account. Maybe the men of this land are wise to say little. One family of busy dwarves with hammer and chisel might mar more than they made.
No, you don't understand, said Gimli. No dwarf could be unmoved by such loveliness. None of Durin's race would mine those caves for stones or ore, not if diamonds and gold could be got there. Do you cut down groves of blossoming trees in the springtime for firewood? We would tend these glades of flowering stone, not quarry them. With cautious skill, tap by tap, a small chip of rock, and no more, perhaps, in a whole anxious day, so we could work, and as the years went by, we should open up new ways and display far chambers that are still dark, glimpsed only as a void beyond fissures in the rock. And lights, Legolas, we should make lights, such lamps as once shone in Khazad Dûm, and when we wished we would drive away the night that has lain there since the hills were made, and when we desired rest, we would let the night return.
You move me, Gimli, said Legolas. I've never heard you speak like this before. Almost you make me regret that I've not seen these caves. Come, let's make this bargain. If we both return safe out of the perils that await us, we'll journey for a while together. You shall visit Fangorn with me, and then I'll come with you to see Helm's Deep.
That would not be the way of return that I should choose,
said Gimli. "But I'll endure, Fangorn, if I have your promise to come back to the caves and share their wonder with me."
"You have my promise," said Legolas. "But alas, now we must leave behind both cave and wood for a while. See, we're coming to the end of the trees. How far is it to Isengard, Gandalf?"
"About 15 leagues, as the crows of Saruman make it," said Gandalf. 5 from the mouth of Deeping Coombe to the fords, and 10 more from there to the gates of Isengard. But we shan't ride all the way this night."
"And when we come there, what shall we see?" said Gimli. "You may know, but I can't guess."
"I don't know myself for certain," answered the wizard. "I was there at nightfall yesterday, but much may have happened since. Yet I think that you'll not say that the journey was in vain, not though the glittering caves of Aglaron be left behind." At last the company passed through the trees, and found that they had come to the bottom of the coombe, where the road from Helm's Deep branched, going one way east to Edoras, and the other north to the fords of Isen. As they rode from under the eaves of the wood, Legolas halted and looked back with regret. Then he began a sudden cry.
"There are eyes," he said, "eyes looking out from the shadows of the boughs. I never saw such eyes before."
The others, surprised by his cry, halted and turned, but Legolas started to ride back.
"No, no," cried Gimli, "do as you please in your madness, but let me first get down from this horse. I wish to see no eyes."
"Stay, Legolas Greenleaf," said Gandalf. "Don't go back into the wood, not yet. Now is not your time." Even as he spoke, there came forward out of the trees 3 strange shapes. As tall as trolls they were, 12 feet or more in height, their strong bodies, stout as young trees, seemed to be clad with raiment or with hide of close-fitting grey and brown. Their limbs were long, and their hands had many fingers. Their hair was stiff, and their beards grey-green as moss. They gazed out with solemn eyes, but they were not looking at the riders. Their eyes were bent northwards. Suddenly they lifted their long hands to their mouths and sent forth ringing calls, clear as notes of a horn, but more musical and various. The calls were answered, and turning again, the riders saw other creatures of the same kind approaching, striding through the grass. They came swiftly from the north, walking like wading herons in their gait, but not in their speed, for their legs and their long paces beat quicker than the heron's wings. The riders cried aloud in wonder, and some set their hands upon their sword-hilts.
"You need no weapons," said Gandalf. "These are but herdsmen. They're not enemies. Indeed, they're not concerned with us at all."
So it seemed to be, for as he spoke, the tall creatures, without a glance at the riders, strode into the wood and vanished.
"Herdsmen?" said Theoden. "Where are their flocks? What are they, Gandalf? For it's plain that to you, at any rate, they're not strange."
"They are the shepherds of the trees," answered Gandalf.
"Is it so long since you listened to tales by the fireside? There are children in your land who, out of the twisted threads of story, could pick the answer to your question. You have seen Ents, O King, Ents out of Fangorn Forest, which in your tongue you call the Entwood. Did you think that the name was given only in idle fancy? Nay, Theoden, it is otherwise. To them you are but the passing tale. All the years from Eorl the young to Theoden the old are of little count to them, and all the deeds of your house but a small matter."
The king was silent.
"Ents," he said at length, "out of the shadows of legend I begin a little to understand the marvel of the trees, I think. I've lived to see strange days. Long we've tended our beasts and our fields, built our houses, wrought our tools, or ridden away to help in the wars of Minas Tirith, and that we called the life of men, the way of the world. We cared little for what lay beyond the borders of our land. Songs we have that tell of these things, but we are forgetting them, teaching them only to children, as a careless custom. And now the songs have come down among us out of strange places, and walk visible under the sun."
"You should be glad, Theoden King," said Gandalf. for not only the little life of men is now endangered, but the life also of those things which you have deemed the matter of legend. You're not without allies, even if you know them not.
Yet also I should be sad, said Theoden, for however the fortune of war shall go, may it not so end that much that was fair and wonderful should pass for ever out of Middle-earth?
It may, said Gandalf.
The evil of Sauron cannot be wholly cured, nor made as if it had not been. But to such days we are doomed. Let us now go on with the journey we've begun.
The company turned then away from the coombe and from the wood, and took the road toward the fords. Legolas followed reluctantly. The sun had set, already it had sunk behind the rim of the world, but as they rode out from the shadow of the hills and looked west to the gap of Rohan, the sky was still red, and a burning light was under the floating clouds. Dark against it there wheeled and flew many black-winged birds. Some passed overhead with mournful cries, returning to their homes among the rocks.
"The carrion fowl have been busy about the battlefield," said Aelmer.
They rode now at an easy pace, and dark came down upon the plains about them. The slow moon mounted, now waxing towards the full, and in its cold silver light the swelling grasslands rose and fell like a wide grey sea. They'd ridden for some 4 hours from the branching of the roads when they drew near to the fords. Long slopes ran swiftly down to where the river spread in stony shoals between high grassy terraces. Borne upon the wind they heard the howling of wolves. Their hearts were heavy, remembering the many men that had fallen in battle in this place. The road dipped between rising turf banks, carving its way through the terraces to the river's edge, and up again upon the further side. There were 3 lines of flat stepping stones across the stream, and between them fords for horses that went from either brink to a bare eyot in the midst. The riders looked down upon the crossings, and it seemed strange to them, for the fords had ever been a place full of the rush and chatter of water upon stones, but now they were silent. The beds of the stream were almost dry, a bare waste of shingles and grey sand.
"This is become a dreary place," said Aelmer.
"What sickness has befallen the river? Many fair things Saruman has destroyed. Has he devoured the springs of Isengard too?"
"So it would seem," said Gandalf.
"Alas," said Theoden, "must we pass this way, where the carrion beasts devour so many good riders of the mark?"
"This is our way," said Gandalf. "Grievous is the fall of your men, but you shall see that at least the wolves of the mountains do not devour them. It is with their friends, the orcs, that they hold their feast. Such indeed is the friendship of their kind. Come."
They rode down to the river, and as they came the wolves ceased their howling and slunk away. Fear fell on them, seeing Gandalf in the moon, and Shadowfax's horse shining like silver. The riders passed over to the islet, and glittering eyes watched them wanly from the shadows of the bank.
"Look," said Gandalf, "friends have laboured here."
And they saw that in the midst of the eyot a mound was piled, ringed with stones, and set about with many spears.
"Here lie all the men of the mark that fell near this place," said Gandalf.
"Here let them rest," said Aelmer, "and when their spears have rotted and rusted, long still may their mount stand and guard the fords of Isen."
"Is this your work also, Gandalf, my friend?" said Theoden. "You accomplished much in an evening and a night."
"With the help of Shadowfax and others," said Gandalf. "I rode fast and far. But here beside the mound I'll say this for your comfort. Many fell in the battles of the fords, but fewer than rumour made them. More were scattered than were slain. I gathered together all that I could find. Some men I sent with Grimbold of Westfold to join Erkenbrand. Some I set to make this burial. They have now followed your marshal, Elfhelm. I sent him with many riders to Edoras. Saruman, I knew, had dispatched his full strength against you, and his servants had turned aside from all their errands and gone to Helm's Deep. The land seemed empty of enemies, yet I feared that wolf-riders and plunderers might ride nonetheless to Meadowseld while it was undefended. But now I think you need not fear. You'll find your house to welcome your return."
"And glad shall I be to see it again," said Theoden. "Though brief now, I doubt not, shall be my abiding there."
With that the company said farewell to the island and the mound, and passed over the river, and climbed the further bank. Then they rode on, glad to have left the mournful fords. As they went, the howling of the wolves broke out anew. There was an ancient highway that ran down from Isengard to the crossings. For some way it took its course beside the river, bending with it east and then north, but at the last it turned away and went straight towards the gates of Isengard, and these were under the mountainside in the west of the valley, 16 miles or more from its mouth. This road they followed, but they did not ride upon it, for the ground beside it was firm and level, covered for many miles about with short springing turf. They rode now more swiftly, and by midnight the fords were nearly 5 leagues behind. Then they halted, ending their night's journey, for the king was weary. They were come to the feet of the misty mountains, and the long arms of Nan Kurunir stretched down to meet them. Dark lay the vale before them, for the moon had passed into the west, and its light was hidden by the hills. But out of the deep shadow of the dale rose a vast spire of smoke and vapour. As it mounted, it caught the rays of the sinking moon, and spread in shimmering billows, black and silver, over the starry sky.
"What do you think of that, Gandalf?" said Aragorn. "One would say that all the wizard's veil was burning."
"There is ever a fume above the valley in these days," said Aomer. "But I've never seen aught like this before. These are streams rather than smoke.
Saruman is brewing some devilry to greet us. Maybe he's boiling all the waters of Isen, and that's why the river runs dry."
"Maybe he is," said Gandalf. "Tomorrow we shall learn what he's doing. But now let's rest for a while if we can."
They camped beside the bed of the Isen River. It was still silent and empty. Some of them slept a little. But late in the night the watchman cried out, and all awoke. The moon was gone. Stars were shining above, but over the ground there crept a darkness blacker than the night. On both sides of the river it rolled towards them, going northward.
"Stay where you are," said Gandalf. "Draw no weapons. Wait, and it will pass you by."
A mist gathered about them. Above them a few stars still glimmered faintly. But on either side there arose walls of impenetrable gloom. They were in a narrow lane between moving towers of shadow. Voices they heard, whisperings and groanings, and an endless rustling sigh. The earth shook under them. Long it seemed to them that they sat and were afraid, but at last the darkness and the rumour passed, and vanished between the mountain's arms. Away south upon the Hornburg, in the middle night men heard a great noise, as a wind in the valley, and the ground trembled, and all were afraid, and no one ventured to go forth. But in the morning they went out and were amazed, for the slain orcs were gone, and the trees also. Far down into the valley of the deep the grass was crushed and trampled brown, as if giant herdsmen had pastured great droves of cattle there. But a mile below the dyke a huge pit had been delved in the earth, and over its stones were piled into a hill. Men believed that the orcs whom they had slain were buried there, but whether those that had fled into the wood were with them, none could say, for no man ever set foot upon that hill. The Death Down it was afterwards called, and no grass would grow there. But the strange trees were never seen in Deeping Coombe again. They had returned at night, and had gone far away to the dark dales of Fangorn. Thus they were revenged upon the orcs. The king and his company slept no more that night, but they saw and heard no other strange thing save one. The voice of the river beside them suddenly awoke. There was a rush of water hurrying down among the stones, and when it had passed, the ice and flowed and bubbled in its bed again, as it had ever done. At dawn they made ready to go on. The light came grey and pale, and they didn't see the rising of the sun. The air above was heavy with fog, and a reek lay on the land about them. They went slowly, riding now upon the highway. It was broad and hard, and well tended. Dimly through the mists they could descry the long arm of the mountains rising on their left. They had passed into Nan Kurunir, the Wizard's Vale. That was a sheltered valley, open only to the south. Once it had been fair and green, and through it the Isen flowed, already deep and strong before it found the plains. For it was fed by many springs and lesser streams among the rain-washed hills, and all about it there had lain a pleasant, fertile land. It was not so now. Beneath the walls of Isengard there still were acres tilled by the slaves of Saruman, but most of the valley had become a wilderness of weeds and thorns. Brambles trailed upon the ground, or clambering over bush and bank, made shaggy caves where small beasts housed. No trees grew there, but among the rank grasses could still be seen the burned and axe-hewn stumps of ancient groves. It was a sad country, silent now but for the stony noise of quick waters. Smokes and steams drifted in sullen clouds and lurked in the hollows. The riders did not speak. Many doubted in their hearts, wondering to what dismal end their journey led. After they had ridden for some miles, the highway became a wide street, paved with great flat stones, squared and laid with skill. No blade of grass was seen in any joint. Deep gutters, filled with trickling water, ran down on either side. Suddenly a tall pillar loomed up before them. It was black, and set upon it was a great stone, carved and painted in the likeness of a long white hand. Its finger pointed north. Not far now they knew that the gates of Isengard must stand, and their hearts were heavy, but their eyes could not pierce the mists ahead. Beneath the mountain's arm, within the Wizard's Vale, through years uncounted, had stood that ancient place that men called Isengard. Partly it was shaped in the making of the mountains, but mighty works the men of Westerness had wrought there of old, and Saruman had dwelt there long and had not been idle. This was its fashion while Saruman was at his height, accounted by many the chief of wizards. A great ring-wall of stone, like towering cliffs, stood out from the shelter of the mountainside, from which it ran and then returned again. One entrance only was there made in it, a great arch delved in the southern wall. Here through the black rock a long tunnel had been hewn, closed at either end with mighty doors of iron. They were so wrought and poised upon their huge hinges, posts of steel driven into the living stone, that when unbarred they could be moved with a light thrust of the arms, noiselessly. One who passed in and came at length out of the echoing tunnel beheld a plain, a great circle, somewhat hollowed like a vast shallow bowl, a mile it measured from rim to rim. Once it had been green and filled with avenues, and groves of fruitful trees, watered by streams that flowed from the mountains to a lake. But no green thing grew there in the latter days of Saruman. The roads were paved with stone flags, dark and hard, and beside their borders, instead of trees, there marched long lines of pillars, some of marble, some of copper and of iron, joined by heavy chains. Many houses there were, chambers, halls, and passages, cut and tunnelled back into the walls upon their inner side, so that all the open circle was overlooked by countless windows and dark doors. Thousands could dwell there, workers, servants, slaves, and warriors with great store of arms. Wolves were fed and stabled in deep dens beneath. The plain, too, was bored and delved. Shafts were driven deep into the ground. Their upper ends were covered by low mounds and domes of stone, so that in the moonlight the ring of Isengard looked like a graveyard of unquiet dead. For the ground trembled. The shafts ran down by many slopes and spiral stairs to caverns far under. There Saruman had treasuries, storehouses, armories, smithies, and great furnaces. Iron wheels revolved there endlessly, and hammers thudded. At night plumes of vapour steamed from the vents, lit from beneath with red light, or blue, or venomous green. To the centre all the roads ran between their chains. There stood a tower of marvellous shape. It was fashioned by the builders of old, who smoothed the ring of Isengard, and yet it seemed a thing not made by the craft of men, but driven from the bones of the earth in the ancient torment of the hills. A peak and isle of rock it was, black and gleaming hard. Four mighty piers of many-sided stone were welded into one. But near the summit they opened into gaping horns, their pinnacles sharp as the points of spears, keen-edged as knives. Between them was a narrow space, and there upon a floor of polished stone, written with strange signs, a man might stand 500 feet above the plain. This was Orthanc, the citadel of Saruman, the name of which had, by design or chance, a twofold meaning. For in the Elvish speech, Orthanc signifies Mount Fang, but in the language of the Mark of old, the cunning mind. A strong place and wonderful was Isengard, and long it had been beautiful. And there great lords had dwelt, the wardens of Gondor upon the west, and wise men that watched the stars. But Saruman had slowly shaped it to his shifting purposes, and made it better, as he thought, being deceived, for all those arts and subtle devices, for which he forsook his former wisdom, and which fondly he imagined were his own, came but from Mordor, so that what he made was naught, only a little copy, a child's model or a slave's flattery, of that vast fortress, armoury, prison, furnace of great power, Barad-dûr, the Dark Tower, which suffered no rival, and laughed at flattery, biding its time, secure in its pride and its immeasurable strength. This was the stronghold of Saruman, as fame reported it. For within living memory the men of Rohan had not passed its gates, save perhaps a few, such as Wormtongue, who came in secret and told no man what they saw. Now Gandalf rode to the great Pillar of the Hand and passed it. And as he did so, the riders saw to their wonder that the hand appeared no longer white. It was stained as with dried blood, and looking closer they perceived that its nails were red. Unheeding, Gandalf rode on into the mist, and reluctantly they followed him. All about them now, as if there had been a sudden flood, wide pools of water lay beside the road, filling the hollows, and rills went trickling down among the stones. At last Gandalf halted, and beckoned to them, and they came, and saw that beyond him the mists had cleared, and a pale sunlight shone. The hour of noon had passed. They were come to the doors of Isengard. But the doors lay hurled and twisted on the ground, and all about, stone, cracked and splintered into countless jagged shards, was scattered far and wide, or piled in ruinous heaps. The great arch still stood, but it opened now upon a roofless chasm. The tunnel was laid bare, and through the cliff-like walls on either side great rents and breaches had been torn. Their towers were beaten to dust. If the great sea had risen in wrath and fallen on the hills with storm, it could have worked no greater ruin. The ring beyond was filled with steaming water, a bubbling cauldron, in which there heaved and floated a wreckage of beams and spars, chests and casks and broken gear. Twisted and leaning pillars reared their splintered stems above the flood, but all the roads were drowned. Far off, it seemed, half veiled in winding cloud, there loomed the island rock. Still dark and tall, unbroken by the storm, the tower of Orthanc stood. Pale waters lapped about its feet. The king and all his company sat silent on their horses, marvelling, perceiving that the power of Saruman was overthrown, but how they could not guess. And now they turned their eyes towards the archway and the ruined gates. There they saw close beside them a great rubble heap, and suddenly they were aware of two small figures lying on it at their ease, grey-clad, hardly to be seen among the stones. There were bottles and bowls and platters laid beside them, as if they had just eaten well, and now rested from their labour. One seemed asleep. The other, with crossed legs and arms behind his head, leaned back against a broken rock, and sent from his mouth long wisps and little rings of thin blue smoke. For a moment Theoden and Eomer and all his men stared at them in wonder. Amid all the wreck of Isengard, this seemed to them the strangest sight. But before the king could speak, the small smoke-breathing figure became suddenly aware of them. As they sat there silent on the edge of the mist, he sprang to his feet. A young man he looked, or like one, though not much more than half a man in height. His head of brown curling hair was uncovered, but he was clad in a travel-stained cloak of the same hue and shape as the companions of Gandalf had worn when they rode to Edoras. He bowed very low, putting his hand upon his breast. Then, seeming not to observe the wizard and his friends, he turned to Eomer and the king. "Welcome, my lords, to Isengard," he said. "We are the Door Wardens. Meriadoc, son of Saradoc, is my name, and my companion, who, alas, is overcome with weariness," he gave the other a dig with his foot, "is Peregrin, son of Paladin, of the House of Tuke. Far in the north is our home. The Lord Saruman is within, but at the moment he is closeted with one Wormtongue, or doubtless he would be here to welcome such honourable guests."
"Doubtless he would," laughed Gandalf. "And was it Saruman that ordered you to guard his damaged doors and watch for the arrival of guests when your attention could be spared from plate and bottle?"
"No, good sir, the matter escaped him," answered Merry gravely. "He has been much occupied. Our orders came from Treebeard, who has taken over the management of Isengard. He commanded me to welcome the Lord of Rohan with fitting words.
I've done my best."